I really believe that you cannot understand or can't automate something if you don't know how to do it first. You have to understand it. You have to touch the data. You got to write it down, even if it's a pencil, put it up on the wall. And then once you're able to do that, that's when the time you start looking at how to make a Google sheet, how to do an Excel sheet, how to do, you know, something a little bit more sophisticated. Because I think the closer you are to the data in the beginning, the more everybody understands it. And then they really understand why you're collecting the data.
This is the Coleman Associate Innovation Podcast.
Innovation?
Yeah, innovation. New, original, and creative. This podcast is designed to challenge the way you think about how healthcare is delivered.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please take your seat and fasten your seatbelt.
Welcome to the Coleman Associates Innovation Podcast, the podcast that brings innovations and best practices in healthcare to your podcasting app. I'm Adrienne, your host, and today I'm so excited to be interviewing Chris Snyder. Chris is the data guru at a community health center out in California, and today we're going to talk about how to collect and use data for a successful rollout and sustainability of DPI process tactics. So without further ado, Chris, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Chris Snyder. I am the Learning and Development Manager for Students and Residents here at Open Door Community Health Centers out here in gorgeous Northern California, the true Northern California, way up on the coastline near the Oregon border. I've been with the health center for about a year. I think it's been 14 months now, and I was privileged to come in and start working with the Open Door as they were just getting in the right where they're in the middle of their DPI journey for their Wave 1 site. So it's been kind of exciting to be here for that portion of it.
Awesome. Yeah, what a way to come into a health center. And 14 months these days is basically like a tenured staff member sometimes with the way turnover has been going for a lot of health centers. Hopefully that's turning around though.
Yep.
So can you just talk about a little bit about what your organization has done up till this point with DPI and kind of what they're working on now?
Open Door has been on this DPI journey now for about a year and a half. So Open Door started the journey for Wave 1, which is four of our sites in fall of 2021. And I came in January of 2022. So they had just gotten started and we graduated our first sites in June of 2022. And then we have been in the midst of our second wave, which has been really exciting. So we've had six additional teams that are starting for our clinics and they started in fall of 2022. And we're about a little over halfway through getting close to our LS3 session. So we've been learning a lot in terms of the rollout piece of this and how to sustain with the Wave 1 sites.
Great. And for those of our listeners who aren't familiar, what Chris's organization has been going through is that DPI collaborative that usually has somewhere between 3 and 5 learning sessions where we go through with the team or teams in this case and can help them to completely redesign their processes. And so Chris is going through the second wave of doing that with the DPI team that they have. Okay. So, Chris, I guess what I'm really curious about is what has your role been in that DPI journey since you all got started?
So my role at Open Door, as far as our DPI journey has been, when I came in, my background was in quality management. I've done a lot of data and a lot of data analysis for a lot of different things. And I'm also, my happy place has always been Excel. So it's one of those things that I love. And so I've been learning a lot about Google Sheets, which is something where we can share a little bit more. So when I came in, there was a need for someone to help pull the data together in a way that we could use the data to make decisions, right? And understand and see and track the different trends. So the request was when I first started was, Chris, how do we take this data and put it all together and then start using it? So concurrently, while I was doing that piece of it, using the manual data that we were collecting and helping to develop some more sophisticated Excel or Google tools, the organization's been working really hard with our Epic people and our Epic team to come up with a way to do what we call an automatic dashboard. So it would make it less labor intensive for the data. So eventually, as we roll out and everyone has learned all the puzzle pieces and we've made this a true part of our what we call our model of care, we would be able to take some of the more laborious parts of the data collection and make it more automatic and connect to our Epic. So we kind of were hitting this from two different levels. I was working on the more manual data collection using Excel sheets and all of that data coming from the different people. And then we were working behind the scenes with our Epic provider to really figure out how do we make this more automatic. So I think that's been a really awesome place to start, because I really believe that you cannot understand or can't automate something if you don't know how to do it first. You have to understand it. You have to touch the data. You got to write it down, even if it's a pencil, put it up on the wall. And then once you're able to do that, that's when the time you start looking at how to make a Google sheet, how to do an Excel sheet, how to do, you know, something a little bit more sophisticated. Because I think the closer you are to the data in the beginning, the more everybody understands it. And then they really understand why you're collecting the data.
Yeah. So I think for those folks that are newer on the DPI journey, or maybe even those that are further along, they might be hearing you say that you are continuing to collect forms of manual data after the collaborative. And in their minds, as I was in my mind, and perhaps you were in your mind, is, do we really have to do that? What would your response be to that, Chris?
Well, if you've just spent all this money putting in this new model of care, right, and you've taken and gotten everybody excited about it, if you don't continue to track data and use data for your decision making and show people why you're doing this, eventually everybody will go back to what they used to do. Right? The value of sustaining, or I would say the success of your sustain part of this initiative, is going to be based on how good your data collection is and how you use the data. And you can never stop collecting or using the data.
Now, I want to talk about your approach to collecting data, but one question that goes along with this and kind of builds off of your other answer is, obviously, one of the reasons that folks are so hesitant to really think about a long-term data process is because of the turnover and problems with retention and burnout that's happening in healthcare right now. Do you see an upside for frontline staff members to collecting the data manually?
Absolutely. I think when you collect the data manually, when the data is not sitting in a spreadsheet and it's there up on a wall, it's there for people to see in real time as they're doing it. That's when you need to know what's happening so you can make the corrections. Obstacles come up every single hour of a clinic, sometimes every 15 minutes. If you don't know there's an obstacle, you can't remove it. And that's what the data is telling you. It's like if your cycle time all of a sudden doubles in an hour and you're looking at going, what the heck's going on right now? That's the time when you can say, okay, I've got this tool in my toolbox that says, if my cycle time's going out of control, can I flip a couple appointments over to telephone appointments? Can I shuffle my schedule a little bit later in the day so I can catch back up? How am I going to get to that point where I can get it back under control? And that's what data shows you. It shows you where you're, what you're doing right. And it also shows you where the obstacles are that you can remove.
Yeah, I can really relate to that. And that's one of the important pieces of the data collection that sometimes gets missed, is folks really using the data to make changes in their behavior in real time. One example that pops into my mind, because I just got back from a little road trip yesterday, is my data shows that depending on what song is playing on my radio, my speed is variable. And so I have to, you know, I would never take a road trip without having my speedometer on, because it helps me to regulate my behavior as I'm listening to different songs. And that has really saved me a lot of money, paying attention to that speedometer. So can you tell us a little bit about how you actually approach data collection in your organization and how that's evolved?
I think the approach has been trying to collect the data at the point where things are happening. So again, as soon as the patient checks in at the front desk, the data collection starts. As the patient moves to the waiting area, when they move into the office, data collection at every single point to really understand what's really happening. I think our approach to data collection is to stay manual during the initial DPI until you get to the rollout side of it. The reason for that is your DPI team are learning how to do those rapid response testing, and you want to keep them as close to the data and helping them understand how to calculate the data on their own before you get into having the Excel spreadsheet or something else do the calculation for you. It really does help put that in their head and understand it. And I think the second piece to the approach to the data has been, make it visual, right? Whatever you can do is to put it up on a wall, put it somewhere where it can be celebrated, it can be talked about, even something as simple as posting it on the wall where you're doing your huddle. And again, a data sitting in a spreadsheet doesn't help anybody. And I think the other piece that really has been our approach, especially since I started and they had the capacity, is publishing the data, right? The teams see the data, but leadership needs to understand what data has been coming through and making sure that you're communicating that data throughout the organization. So we have a weekly newsletter that goes out every week that actually has the results from the week before, as well as we have a web portal, which is our intranet. And on the intranet, you can go and see the last week's data and see the data trends and look at any site and see how are people doing. And then you can actually look at the care teams and see how each care team's doing within those sites. So I think making the data easy to digest and readable and something as simple as a line chart, it really helps to show people what's really happening.
Yeah. And so just to get really concrete for our listeners, when you're talking about tracking data manually, is it right now happening on an Excel spreadsheet? Is it happening on a piece of flip chart paper? Like how, if I'm a medical assistant working, how am I tracking my data?
So we've moved on to the next because we're starting rollout phase. So we are now at the point where we're using a Google Sheet that we've developed that actually has a tab for each patient care team. And on that tab, front desk starts on the Google Sheet because everyone has that access. Front desk checks the patient in and puts the start time on it. And then the MA checks the patient out at the end of the cycle and then puts the end time. And so the data is being collected in real time. They're doing simple things like we think it's just as important to track things like their in and out to get their cycle time and their patients per hour. How many charts are they completing by the end of the day? All of that's part of our big, what we call our audacious goals, these big goals we have in mind, and we're looking at that. But we also think it's important to track the process behaviors. So did the team hold their huddle at the beginning of each clinic? Did the team review their data, right? Did they review it at the end of the day to see how they did? Did the team do a quick start and how many did they do, right? So did they do their scrubbing? Did they do their visit prep? So the teams actually do go through and track that on the Excel spreadsheet. And I say Excel, but I interchange that between Excel and Google. Either one will work. We're using Google right now. Our organization hasn't gone to Microsoft 365 yet. Once we go to Microsoft 365, we'll probably move it all back to Excel. But Google Sheets is a really simple tool and it's free. So we're able to do so much of this on there. As long as there's no patient identifying information, then we can track all of this data, you know, and use it on that free site.
Great. So what I hear, and I've seen your sheet for this, and it's something that you've developed over a long period of time, but it's literally if I'm an MA, you send me a new link each week, right? For me to be typing in my data with, here's my with the front desk also, here's the check-in, here's the check-out, and looking at, did the chart get completed for that one? Did I scrub and rake today? Did my huddle start on time? Did I do my visit prep, my robust confirmations, so that I can kind of see that? I really like that you all are tracking the process measures also, because I think it really connects for folks like, look, I did all of my robust confirmations, and now I'm having a low no-show rate, or I've done this many quick starts, and that has really led to a shorter cycle time, which can be really valuable for folks. One thing that can be kind of intimidating whenever you're thinking about this amount of data that you're bringing in is how do you approach data analysis and make it that user-friendly data where everybody knows what it means?
That definitely is one of the hardest parts of it. So I think the helping people understand what data we're collecting and why we're collecting it, and then being able to interpret that. So I have in the Google Sheet that I've developed, every week we set up the new sheet, the data from the week before, the aggregate data for each provider is put into a data trend section, and then charts can be generated. So you at any time, someone can go and look at a patient care team, pull it up, and you can see the trend over the last 12 weeks. How are they doing? So you can see those improvements, or you can see what we do is we automatically use conditional formatting to do the, we started with a stoplight chart. So it was like ours was the standard. It was green, yellow, and red, right? Green meeting, hey, they're meeting the goal. They're doing great. Yellow is, they're either learning or they're starting to get there. And then red is, oh, maybe somebody needs some help here. And so simple colors really helped. We did get pushback. A lot of people felt that the colors were, as soon as something went into the red, they would get very alarmed, right? And so we thought of it as we were a little naive, thinking that would spark some friendly, healthy competition. We learned very quickly that some sites found that to be very intimidating and kind of held them back. So we kind of rethought the colors. And so we made it to where there was a pretty achievable level at green. So the green's where we want to get everybody to that achievable level. But the gold was that gold standard. That's our audacious goal. That if they hit that gold, that's like, I have to look at this, and I call it the money shot, meaning that that patient's getting the best possible care we can give them when we get them into the gold. And so by making that simple change, it really took the fear of the red away a little bit, because it's much, you know, there's something they can achieve pretty easily. And then we could say, okay, now let's push just a little harder to get to that goal. And I think that really helped. The other piece I think that was really important was, again, don't leave the data in a spreadsheet. As soon as you leave it in the spreadsheet, the data is not helpful. What we've found is that now that we've got something where someone, where the RN clinic manager as a report every week can see how each provider is doing, she or he will go through and look at those reports every week. And when they see a team that's really falling in that red and yellow, but they can see progress, but they can also see when things start to slip, then the most important part of that data is now that's a conversation. Right? That conversation is, I see that their cycle time has been in the red for 12 weeks and they keep trying things. I can see that they've implemented quick starts. I can see that they're doing their midway knocks. You can see what they're trying. And you could also see if they're not, they don't have any robust confirmation calls, or the percentage of appointments completed with a robust confirmation call has dropped from 40% down to 10%. So what it does is it gives them the data they need to have the conversation individually with the patient care team. So we look at it, this is not a retaliatory, this isn't really a performance evaluation. This is the leadership looking at it going, this team's doing really well, this team's not. Let's talk about why they're not doing well. Let's talk about what's working for them or not working for them, and what can we do a little differently, and what obstacles do we have left that we need to do to help that team.
Yeah, and that really leads me into my next question, which is, how are you all as leaders using this data? And I'd be curious about from a top leadership perspective and all the way down, because like just how you're describing the nurse managers using it.
Yeah, we do the data. I mean, we finally had enough data on the last cycle that we could do a true quarterly report that we reported to the executive leadership team. And it was a really interesting, we found that in some of the data that we had a couple of teams that were never hitting or getting close to the patients per hour. Right? So they're never getting to our goal for patients per hour. And what we found is after looking at the data and then taking a look at our Epic and our schedule, is we found that the ones who were really struggling the most were not scheduled to hit the goal. Right? So if they're not scheduled for 2.25 patients per hour, they're very unlikely to hit 2.25 patients per hour. So those are the types of things we've been finding. And we've been really... our I team has really done, a good job trying to engage the executive leadership team by reporting the data every week, as well as challenging the executive leadership team to be part of the data. And so one of the things we did is we kicked off a Vroom module completion, which is the training modules for all the puzzle pieces. And when we looked at it, we saw that many of the leadership had not completed any or some of them. So we started visualizing the data, and we had what we called a Vroom race against the Wave 2 DPI teams and the site leadership to see which team could actually complete their Vroom modules first. And the executive leadership who had the worst statistic when we started, in the end, won the race.
I just want to highlight that as everybody should steal that idea, because it's very hard to analyze the data if you're not familiar with what's happening on the floor. So that is a brilliant idea. And just a definitional thing is, for those that might not be familiar, the I team stands for infrastructure team, which is the team of leaders who, alongside the DPI teams, works to decrease barriers in the changes that they're making and to help them to get their RRTs off to a really strong start. Are there differences in what the leadership looks at versus what the nurse managers look at versus what is being collected at on the frontline level?
There's definitely always a little bit of a difference. The nurse leadership will probably look more at the individual data. So they can go back to any of the spreadsheets and see like the time in, the time out, if there were anything came up in their actual spreadsheets. Really, the executive leadership looks more at the aggregate data, right? They look more at the data trends for each site. One of the things we did was we put up a giant star chart in the administration building that every single leader has to walk by to get to their office, where we have the stars of our four colors. and we have big graphs of the actual four measures that we're measuring so that no matter what, they see it. And Tory, our president, has said several times that that's what he looks for. He comes in the office on Mondays and he's looking to see what the star chart tell me from last week. So we think that keeping that data right there for them really helps make it super present, because sometimes people don't always have time to click and open an email.
Yeah, I'm always a fan of anything that you can make visual. I also love putting data on the back of bathroom stalls. Anyone who's listening to this podcast that knows me knows exactly why I wanted to interview you, as you're talking about Excel and Google Sheets and all of those great things that I love too. So it sounds like really leaders are kind of looking at the more condensed version, but all the metrics that they're looking at are the same. I'm sure your leaders look at some additional metrics too, but I think that is a point that can get lost of, it's not that uncommon to see, you know, frontline staff looking at maybe cycle time and patients per hour and missed opportunities. But then you'll see that the executive leadership team is looking at like the overall, like how many patients people are seeing a week versus the patients per hour. Not that that isn't necessarily an important metric, but like sometimes they don't match up. And so a team can really be thinking that they're doing one way while the top leadership is seeing something different. And that can create a lot of friction between frontline staff and other leaders. What advice would you have for our listeners?
I think the thing that I always look at is that you got to make the data fun. I don't know how else to explain it. Something like as simple as putting a race car on the chart when we did our broom race. We had a robust confirmation call derby where we challenged teams to get, you know, to set a goal to improve the percentage of completed appointments with a robust confirmation call. And we had one site out in Fortuna. They were amazing. They started off at a percentage of about like 12%, and they set themselves a goal. They wanted to be at 40% within like 6 weeks, and they're consistently hitting 40% and actually have gotten up to the 50%. And there's three providers that are in the 90s now. And that was a huge goal. So I think setting those challenges, when you identify where an area people are struggling, we'll say, okay, we're going to actually focus on this challenge right now and try and get that robust confirmation call percentage up. And then we'll ask people to, okay, what would be a stretch goal for you? And then we do carrots. So we call them carrots. And I think it's funny, I don't know if that language came from Coleman, but carrots are really that small little touch of something that just say thank you. So it can be something as simple as a thank you card or somebody dropping them a note. But what we found out, we did a survey of all of the sites and said, what do people want for carrots? And of course, gift cards were one of them. Everybody wants a gift card, but gift cards can get a little tricky because of taxes, right? So we said, okay, if it's not a gift card, what else would you want? And what they wanted was swag, open door swag. So we put together a budget and we ordered a bunch of very cool open door swag. And now each site has a small box of carrots and that people earn. So as you do a challenge, you can say, this team, I had my very first team went all gold, hit all four of our bold, audacious goals, we call them. And they were pretty big stretch goals. This provider team hit that goal over and over again. If you look at her quarterly, she averaged in the gold for the entire quarter. It was amazing what this team did. So we recognized that. We put it in the newsletter. We celebrated it. We told people all about it. And I think that's the data. When people understand the data is getting used, they will collect the data. If you don't use the data and you don't celebrate the data and you don't use that for real change, then they'll be like, I don't know why I'm doing this. And they'll get that they'll get discouraged and they'll stop doing it. And you'll see the data really start falling off if you stop using the data for decision-making, for rewards. I mean, not sure how else to explain that part.
Yeah, no, I think I'll make sure to link the carrots article that we have on our website in the show notes. I love that you asked staff what they wanted, right? It's like that platinum rule of treat others, not how you want to be treated, but how they want to be treated. And I think that's a really great idea. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And then can you share Open Door's goals, just so that as folks hear that they hit the gold in their goals?
So we set the goal really early on at I think it was within that first 3 months when the entire group gets together and they set we called them bold, audacious goals. And we use that all the time. So the goals are cycle time would be 90% of patient appointments are at 35 minutes or less. And that's toes in to toes out the door. So if they have labs, if they have anything else going on, toes in and toes out. And by saying 90%, that helps with any of the, you know, well child appointments or something where they have labs and they've got to go x-ray or something like that. And then the second thing we had was missed opportunities. So we set the goal of 0 missed opportunities provider team per day, which was a big, bold, audacious goal. But in fact, it's very difficult to get a true 0. So anything under 0.49 or under is considered meeting that goal. And we have one site that's averaging a 0.8 right now, 0.08, which is an amazing. And then the third one was chart completion. So we want to see charts close, 95% of charts close same day, which means by 8 o'clock that night. The goal, the only reason when we set 8 o'clock was some teams actually don't close clinic until 7 p.m. So really we want to see that within an hour of the actual site closing. And then lastly, the other goal, and that's the goal we tell people, this is the one that keeps the lights on, right? Which is the patients per hour. And so patients per hour is 2.25. And partly why we selected that is because we're in the process of implementing simplified patient scheduling, which is being implemented on our one sites by the end of this month. So we're right in the thick of it. And then our wave 2 sites will be in September, which will give us that true 2.25 and the ability to meet that goal.
Great. Is there anything you'd like to get on your soapbox about before I record the outro?
I think probably my biggest thing I see a mistake that's made when people collect data, and I think part of this comes from my quality management experience, is the data has to get used and it has to be used for good, right? Not evil. We have to look at it that way. Data should not be used to be retaliatory. It can be evaluative in some ways, but the data, if people fear the data, they're not going to collect the data. So if you say that if you land in the red, that you're not in trouble, what it means is we're going to be coming to you to ask, you know, what are your obstacles? Let's dig a little deeper. Let's go a little harder to find out what happened and to really help the team understand and figure out what you can do to help them get to the next level. You have to basically do what you say, right? You can't just say, oh, you're not in trouble. And then everybody's like, oh my gosh, that provider was in the red for 6 weeks and nothing's changing. That isn't just the provider team's responsibility to change that. Leadership has to help. Leadership has to offer. They have to give them the time to dig in and figure it out. I think that's probably the most important thing. And then the number one thing I look at, and we call them here bright spots. So we look at mining the data in terms of when you have a team that's doing particularly well and they're just killing it every week. Instead of always looking at the people who aren't doing well, take a look at where the bright spots are, where the data is really showing this model is working, and mine that information to find out why. Because it's possible that that team has figured out a different way to apply the model in a way that could be duplicated somewhere else and could help someone. By only focusing on the red data, only focusing on the yellow, and not looking at where it's going green and it's starting to get really good in that gold level for us, then you're losing all that information. Because I think what I've seen from my experience in the last year is that teams are really good at figuring some of this out on their own. And they're excited to share what they've done. They're excited to be part. It's like, oh my gosh, you mean what I did for my team could help somebody else? Let me show them how to do this. And we really have seen some big changes by people just stepping up saying, hey, we got this. We figured this out. How do we do this better? And I think that that's been probably one of the biggest successes for Open Door.
Yeah, I absolutely love that democratizing the data can really democratize the solutions too. So, well, I'd like to give a big thanks to Chris and the Open Door team for sharing the cool things that they're doing with data. Make sure that you like and subscribe to the Coleman Associates Innovation Podcast so that you never miss an episode. If you or someone you know should be interviewed for an episode, just shoot us an email at notify@ColemanAssociates.com or reach out to us on social media. To keep up with all of the Chispa happenings, follow us on LinkedIn. A big shout out to Jonathan at Bionic Squid for all of his podcasting help, and we'll see you next time.